The chapter begins with these quotes, first from George Orwell. "Whoever controls the image and information of the past determines what and how future generations will think. Whoever controls the information and images of the present determines how those same people will view the past." And this by Count Leo Tolstoy from his essay Education and Children. "Take at hazard 100 children of several educated generations and 100 uneducated children of the people, and compare them in anything you please, in strength, in agility, in mind, in the ability to acquire knowledge, even in morality. And in all respects, you are startled by the vast superiority on the side of the children of the uneducated." A nation from the bottom up. Establishing shot. 50 children of different ages are teaching each other while the schoolmaster hears lessons at his desk from older students. An air of quiet activity fills the room. A wood stove crackles in the corner. What drove the 19th century school world, celebrated in Edward Eggleston's classic, The Hoosier Schoolmaster, was a society rich with concepts like duty, hard work, responsibility, and self-reliance. A society overwhelmingly local in orientation, although never so provincial it couldn't be fascinated by the foreign and exotic. But when Tent Chautauqua, with its fanfare about modern marvels, left town, conversation readily returned to the text of local society. Eggleston's America was a special place in modern history, one where the society was more central than the national political state. Words can't adequately convey the stupendous radicalism hidden in our quiet villages, a belief that ordinary people have a right to govern themselves, a confidence that they can. Most revolutionary of all was the conviction that personal rights can only be honored when the political state is kept weak. In the classical dichotomy between liberty and subordination written into our imagination by Locke and Hobbes in the 17th century, America struggled down the libertarian road of Locke for a while her three godfather nations, England, Germany, and France, followed Hobbes and established Leviathan states through the 18th and 19th centuries. Toward the end, America began to follow the old world's lead. For Hobbes, social order depended upon state control of the inner life, a degree of mental colonization unknown to the tyrants of history, whose principal concern had been controlling the bodies of their subjects. But the sheer size of an America without national roads or electronic networks ensured that liberty would be nurtured outside the ring of government surveillance. Then, too, many Americans came out of the dissenting religious sects of England, independent congregations which rejected church-state partnerships. The bulk of our population was socially suspect anyway. Even our gentry was second and third string by English standards, gentlemen without inheritance. The rest a raggle-taggle band of wastrels, criminals, Shanghaied boys, poor yeomanry, displaced peasants. Benet the poet describes our founding stock. The disavouched, hard-bitten pack shipped overseas to steal a continent, with neither shirts nor honor to their back. In Last Essays, George Bernanos observes that America, unlike other nations, was built from the bottom up. Francis Parkman made the same observation a century earlier. What America violently rejected in its early republic was the Anglican homily on obedience set down by English established church doctrine in the Tudor state of 1562. A doctrine likening order in heaven with the English social order on earth, fixed and immutable. Quote, "The sun, moon, stars, rainbows, thunder, lightning, clouds, and all the birds of the air do keep their order. The earth, trees, seeds, plants, herbs, corn, grass, and all manner of beasts keep themselves in order. Every degree of people, in their vocations, callings, and office has appointed to them their duty and order." Close quote. By 1776, the theocratic utopia toward which such a principle moves was well established in the Britain of the German Georges, as well as in the three northern German states of Prussia, Saxony, and Hanover. Together with England, all three were to play an important role in 20th century forced schooling in America. The same divine clock, superficially secularized, was marking time in the interlude of Enlightenment France, the pre-revolutionary utopia which would also have a potent effect on American school thought. Hobbes and his doctrine of mental colonization eclipsed Locke everywhere else, but not in America.